Convene item number five, North of Falcon Policy. This is a briefing and public hearing. So Kyle, I will let you take it over.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Directors. I am Kyle Laddix, Intergovernmental Salmon Manager for the Fish Program, and I am here to give you a briefing on your North of Falcon policy. If my teeth are chattering, it's because someone turned the heat down. It's pretty chilly down here this morning. I know, it's temperature.
We're in a budget austerity program.
I'd just like to take a minute, Kyle, and thank your boss, Mr. Warren, for bringing the goodies here to the Commission's feeding station.
What was that?
In the bowl, Mr. Warren brought those. I think he might have made them himself. I'm not sure. No.
Absolutely not. I cannot take credit.
Okay. We know who can.
Can we get back to the agenda, Mr. Vice Chair?
I'd like to thank your staff for doing things.
I'm sorry for the interruption, Kyle.
So this morning I'll be giving you a brief review of the current policy. You had a more detailed review in November and heard some initial public comment then. You should have received a draft updated policy during the break. I'll walk you through some potential modifications that are outlined in that draft. I'll outline the schedule for considering a new policy and then seek your guidance on any modifications to the draft you were provided or otherwise. So again, a really brief review of the current policy. The policy tells department staff to ensure that our management decisions are consistent with the list of things, our statutory authority, the U.S. v. Oregon and Washington court cases, Endangered Species Act, applicable harvest management plans, the Pacific Salmon Treaty, state tribal agreements, and of course with your policies. And it provides more detailed guidance to the department on annual salmon fishery planning, conservation principles, how we provide harvest opportunity, how we conduct in-season management, monitoring and sampling enforcement, how to deal with gear and fishery conflicts, incidental mortalities, and communications with the public. And last, we're instructed in the policy to implement management consistent with the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative, that management will be science-based, well-documented, transparent, well-communicated, and accountable, and that it will meet or exceed ESA recovery and conservation goals. I'll just give a little more detail on some of the sections where there are proposed changes to the policy. In the fishery management section of the current policy, there are three subsections. One is just a general subsection that provides guidance on how to provide opportunity. And then there are more detailed sections by species. For sockeye, pink, and chum salmon, it gives guidance on Fraser and Puget Sound origin pink, chum, and sockeye opportunities. And for Chinook and coho, it gives specific guidance for Puget Sound for those species, and then references region-specific commission policies and plans for other regions. There's a single statement in the current in-season management section that says that when we take in-season management actions, they'll be consistent with pre-season conservation and harvest management objectives and the intent developed through North of Falcon process. You had heard some testimony in November, an addition here that I'll show you later in the presentation. So I'll walk through the potential modifications. If you have the draft new version in front of you, I'll sort of go through that page by page. On page one, middle of the page, there's just sort of an editorial revision to the statement about the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Planning Project, and it's just to change the wording there to say that salmon and steelhead will be managed to recovery and to assure sustainability. The current policy said to recover and to assure, and that's not the exact wording in that plan, so that's just a sort of housekeeping change there. Turning to page two, just a revision to the bullet on Willapa Bay management. When the current policy was developed, the Willapa Bay policy wasn't complete. So this is just editing language there to reference the new policy rather than the statement that it will be followed when the policy is developed. And not done in track changes on this version is sort of a reorganization of this page. Your current policy, as I said before, is divided up into pieces. And the current sockeye, chum, and pink salmon section, everything listed was actually specific to Puget Sound fisheries. And then under Chinook and Coho section, you reference regional policies that actually include other species. So the suggestion is just to reorganize this into regional subsections, Puget Sound, Grays Harbor, Willapa Bay, Columbia River, Pacific Ocean. So the draft you have is the identical language to the current policy, just rearranged into those new sections. Turning to page 3 on in-season management, there's a proposed addition here that's shown in red. Reading it from page 3, it's to say that prior to use, in-season updates of stock abundance affecting Puget Sound fisheries will be evaluated for technical merit and potential to improve achievement of conservation and allocation objectives. And then two sub-bullets under that. When possible, in-season updates should be documented within the co-manager's annual list of agreed fisheries or as part of regional co-manager MOUs. And that descriptions of potential modifications to fisheries that are contingent on in-season updates should be included in the list of agreed fisheries. So this was based on the testimony you heard in November, encouraging us to document our in-season update methods and thoroughly analyze them as we always do. Also adding something to say that if we have situations where we may alter fisheries based on an ISU, that we explain what those steps to alter the fishery might be in the list of agreed fisheries. So that's the proposed modifications to the current policy. The schedule here, as you know, you heard the initial briefing and public comment in November. You have a new draft provided today. You'll be hearing additional public comment today. We're looking to you for guidance on whether this is a draft you'd like to put out and get more comment on, or if there are modifications you'd like to see before doing that. We'd like to post a revised draft online for public comment prior to your January meeting, and then hoping that you'll take action in January. With that, I can take any questions if you have any initial comments.
Thank you, Carpenter.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Kyle. I think what I'd like to do, I don't know what my colleagues would like to do, I think I'd like to hear public comment, and then we can provide you with some guidance.
Sure.
Any objection to that? Thank you, Kyle. Then we will go to... Oh, yes.
In addition to us, who has to approve this in the greater world out there?
I'm sorry.
Do we have to get approval from the tribes to make these kinds of changes? No.
No.
Okay.
This is sort of your direction on.
Yeah. Good. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. And we'll go to public comment. And I think everybody knows the rules of the comment. So Tim Hamilton and Norm.
Tim Hamilton, I'm president of Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy, which is a nonprofit out towards the coast. I want to tell you that we believe that a lot of problems in North of Falcon are simple. It started in 1999, and if you go back and read the delegation from the commission to the directors, it had a comment in there from, I think, the assistant attorney general at that time. And it said, in doing this delegation, you must make sure the public has a meaningful role. Now, often you'll see a comment that says the commission sets the policy and the department implements, which is a decision that you guys reached under one sentence of the law. But it didn't stop there. You have the responsibilities, and the citizens had the right to transparency. When this came to you, you chose to delegate down your powers of setting seasons, but we don't believe the statute says that you can delegate down your responsibilities to the citizens. When we put the joint letter out, I hope you all had a chance to read, we recognize that there's a difference between tribal governments and state governments, and the tribal government has its rights and its treaty obligations if the state are there. But when it comes to this department, a gentleman sent me an email that's all too telling. He described it in NOF as FFA. The public goes into meetings, becomes totally frustrated. They then hear the department's meeting behind closed doors that they're going to be locked out of with tribal co-managers, and it goes to fear. Then they see the results coming out the back door, and it's anger. When you have book of business, I come from the private sector, where the results of your staff's interaction with the customers is frustration, fear, and anger, we have a definite problem. It will affect us in the budget. It will affect us everywhere. The lack of faith in North of Falcon is a lot to do with the way the department manages this book of business with the public, and transparency is the only way out that we know for both the tribal citizens. And by the way, the tribal citizens have the same right to transparency in state government as we do. What the tribe does in their government business is their business. But they have that right too. And when we visit on the street corners and on the rivers with tribal fishermen, they can't tell what's going on behind closed doors either. We get connected all the time where they ask us these questions. We've got to restore the public's meaningful role. I thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions? Andrew, and then Norm.
Well, I guess I shouldn't be sitting here wasting your time. Mr. Hamilton has basically stated what I came to bring to you, and that is this year more than ever, the department, given the economic necessities of the department, needs the public support. What I would like to see included in the North of Falcon policy is a stronger statement on transparency. Not that I myself want to be included and able to make comments during negotiations between my representatives in state government, this agency, and the tribal community, but being able to see what occurs so that instead of guessing, or instead of hearing rumors, or instead of reading it on some bulletin board because someone's angry and they really don't understand what they're talking about, if we can open this process up further to try to help to make the public, that the user groups, the recreational user groups, more aware of the difficulties that are involved and the challenges that are involved in managing the fisheries, not only in Puget Sound, but all of Washington State, that perhaps they'll understand the need that the department has in maintaining a viable, effective organization to protect the resources of this state. Because that's what this is all about, conservation. We need to take action now. We need to educate our public. Thank you very much.
Thank you, as always, Norm. Any questions? And Brian Fleming, please. And Andrew, yours.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you all. Thanks for your service. I have been invested myself in understanding and participating in North America in the last several years, as many of you know. I concur completely with the policy recommendations that staff has made to you and encourage you to adopt them. This is also an opportunity to provide some direction and instruction to staff, and I concur completely with Tim and Norm's comments on the need for transparency, and also realize that that's probably not going to happen. The one thing I think you can do is urge staff to press on having observers in the process. I have been an observer, as some of you commissioners have. The tribal dialogue with your staff is behind closed doors. Is if it happened in the halls of this room, it would be illegal. It's abusive. And having observers in the room is one way to help buffer staff to some of that, which is intended for one purpose only, and that's to create competitive advantage for the tribes. The second thing I think it needs to do is to just bring some of that small glimmer of transparency to the process, to the public. The observers have the ability to communicate in ways that staff can't do that. So I would encourage you to offer that kind of direction. The in-season management piece is very important, and I concur with the policy recommendation, but if the discussion doesn't get elevated to the front of North of Falcon and is relegated to the back of the discussion, it always gets timed out and falls off the table. So if you could provide instruction to staff that discussion about in-season management needs to come at the front of the process, it's hugely important. We have a Department of Justice letter that lays out a timeline and process for achieving the goal of separating ESA considerations from the North of Falcon allocation discussion. And that's not going to happen in time for the 2017 North of Falcon. It should. I've heard encouragingly that staff is a little behind, but still on schedule to meet the February deadline for implementing those changes. But that is a pathway to get ESA and the North of Falcon negotiations separated in time, which will also help to level the playing field. That's not going to be there in time for 2017. So 2017 is going to be some form of repeat. I want to express my appreciation for the stance that Director Unsworth and his staff took in this year's North of Falcon. It was ugly, it was painful, but it achieved a necessary purpose. And I hope we don't have to go down that room again, but down that road again. But having done that once, I hope that we don't have to do it again. We can have a better outcome. And the last thing I want to say tomorrow, please hold up on the Columbia River policy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew, as always. Appreciate it. No. Was there a question? No.
Andy, we pretty much, those of us involved in the North of Falcon process are as frustrated as you are. And on a nation-to-nation negotiation, the way it's defined is that we can't have observers in there unless the tribes agree to it. Do you have any idea on how we might solve this short of the protocols that we are dictated to?
There was a suggestion that I heard, and it may have been attributed to Mr. Patillo. I'm not sure. I can't speak for him. But the suggestion was that...
Just walked in.
The suggestion was that observers be put on staff, you know, a $1 contract, and made part of the department's representation. Whether that's, you know, it's fairly transparent. I don't know whether that creates a loophole big enough to jump through or not, but I think that it's important to ask and answer that question, Connie. And the people on staff are really good. They've been doing this a long time. If there's a way, I believe that they can find it and that it would be worthwhile to find.
I wonder if Bill Freymeyer would be willing to weigh in on this, to give us his opinion on this. This is a legal issue, nation to nation.
I'm happy to write it down.
Okay.
Okay. Right now.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a tough nut.
Thank you, Mr. Marks, and thank you, Mr. Hamilton, and Norm, for your comments. I mean, myself, prior to becoming on the commission, I was and still am involved in the North of Falcon policy, and I do recall there was a time when observers were allowed to participate, and in fact, I know Commissioner Carpenter and I were observers at one time, and I think Gary Crine was an observer also. And I don't know if that made things any better, but I'm just kind of curious. I know at some point the observers were not that was not something that was allowed, and I'd be curious to maybe someone can refresh my recollection as to, you know, what happened and efforts to kind of get that going back again, because this is a persistent issue. So anyway, that's maybe if somebody wants to address
that. Wanted to add to that.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. That was a good point. I just want to go back because I've done a lot of North of Falcons, and I sure don't have an answer to make them better. But I do truly believe that when we had observers in those meetings, and I did that for a number of years with Bob, with other folks, I can't even remember all of them. It was more a situation, I think, that it was a chance to build relationships with people. We got to know the tribal folks much better. We got to talk to them in the rooms, in the hallways. We got to interact with their staff. And there was just a lot of knowledge that was exchanged. And get to know people a bit better. And once in a while, we got singled out in the meetings for something that we weren't, or something that we were. But it was all appropriately done. And I think the chance for that type of interaction in a government-to-government meeting like that is extremely healthy. I hope that the tribes will reconsider that, because I think it's in the best interest of all of us and them. Regarding what happened earlier this spring, it was a very, very difficult thing for the private sector, for the director and his staff. And the one thing that happens in the meetings when it's government to government is, I think the staff takes more abuse than they should, and I really respect them for refraining themselves. But what happened this last spring was not a good thing for the tribes either. And many, many of the tribes were upset with the delay in finding a solution, with the way people were being painted in the corners, the way we had all the feds involved coming and going. And I think a lot of the tribes want to have a better process this year. I really believe that. And I think the staff is prepared to set the tone for that going in this year. But I guess in closing, I do think openness and transparency is probably a very, very healthy thing, and hopefully we can achieve it more so in 2017.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I agree with what you're saying. And as I understand it, there's the tribes really don't even want the commissioners represented there. So the expansion to allow observers from the public sector is probably, the opportunity for that is probably dim, you know. And it's unfortunate that the tribes want to close even more doors in terms of transparency. And I know that the department has already had meetings with the tribes in advance of, in anticipation of this year's North of Falcon process. But I myself hold little hope that we're going to see much different process this year.
If I could make a quick comment in response,
yeah.
I believe it was 2 years ago that I was one of the people invited to the first plenary session as an observer with Commissioner Mank and Commissioner Carpenter. So this has not been a consistent situation. But I think that Commissioner Carpenter's comments are extremely important. We speak of the tribes as an entity. It's a collection of people who don't like each other and don't talk to each other except when they have a common enemy. And the fact remains that there are some things that work well in the dark that don't work so well out in the light. And this is what's important, is you've got to shine a little bit of light in this, because it doesn't work for anybody unless you get that light shined on it and opened up a little bit. So that's my own opinion.
As I think we've talked about transparency in relation to North of Falcon for years and years and years, as long as I've been on the commission. And I was very impressed with the advocacy's letter. It started me thinking with fresh eyes on this whole question of, no, we have two sovereigns, State of Washington and the tribes. Our laws include sunshine laws that guarantee accountability and transparency. The tribes may or may not have such sunshine laws. So when we get together to negotiate, is it necessary that we accept the relinquishment of these civil protections? Is that absolutely necessary? Or is it legal for us to do? So I've put together a blue sheet to consider tomorrow, in which we have a more informed discussion of this, because obviously we can't have that kind of final discussion today. We've been going at it this way year after year after year, where we gripe about it every year. We're not happy with it, but we don't know what to do with it. So I think we need to concentrate our thought, have a briefing, get the informed, deliberative advice from the AG's office. And that would just be advice about how they read the law. But I think it would be worth a very open, thoughtful conversation, in-depth conversation, because I'm not sure, given that the department is led by a commission, that our delegation to the director on this topic flows without the obligations under the Sunshine Laws. Because most of the time when we delegate our authorities, the party that assumes our authorities then have to comply with the Sunshine Laws just as we do. So I think it's worth a conversation, and I've put together a blue sheet for the consideration of the commission tomorrow.
And a suggestion about how maybe to get around this process. There is a process in international meetings used by the United Nations for its various conventions. Those are closed meetings, but they have parallel conferences that run at the same time called the non-governmental organization or NGO conferences. It might be I've attended a couple of NGO conferences, and you do know more about what's going on with the international negotiations that are going on behind closed doors just by being there, and the kinds of conversations, the hallway conversations that were talked about. So that might be a process that could be explored.
If I could make one additional comment, please. The difference is, and I think it's a key distinction, is that we're tied together inextricably with the tribes through the permit to fish that comes via the BIA nexus. And we found out in 2016 that if we walk away from the table, that the tribes get a pass and they fish. And we stand on the bank and our businesses get hurt and opportunity is lost, and it ultimately brings harm not only to the non-tribal sector but to the tribal sector as well through the court of public opinion. And the tribes are not bound to talk with us, negotiate with us. So I think the common thought process suggests that if we do something that the tribes don't like, the tribes simply walk away from the table. And we know that from experience now that that is not a question mark anymore. That's they're going to go ahead and fish, and that's going to create issues. So we don't have to have much conjecture about going down that road. We know what happens. The question is, I think, and rightly, it has to be asked. Gets back to the same thing. Is that option worse than the kind of, quote, deal, which really isn't a deal that we've been forced to take in the past? In many sections of Puget Sound, the fishing opportunity has dwindled to the point where there just isn't much to lose. And whether this is supportive of the situation that we hope to create in 2018 going forward, or whether it's a one-off for 2017, that's an important piece to be folded into this discussion. But I agree. I think that it needs to be poked and pushed and send staff into those negotiations armed with a full suite of information and also a robust set of directions and support from the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one more. Mr. Fleming.
Thank you very much for having me here. So last time I spoke to you guys, I was sort of the naive optimist, and I'll still try and reprise the fresh eyes role that I had last time. I'm here again to ask the commission, the director, to make specific proposals publicly to the tribes to strengthen co-management and the North of Falcon process. These don't need to just be legal. I recognize that legal, you know, working on open meetings through what the actual AG says we must comply with, that's an important part of this. But I don't understand. Co-management arose out of mutual co-interest. It's the interests of the tribes and in the interests of the state to cooperatively manage seasons. And that's why this came about. And we can and should take steps to attempt to strengthen that so that it can be successful. I believe that there are three aspects that in particular would really benefit both groups. The first, as I said last time, is explicitly defining dispute resolution in advance that both sides agree to. You might point yourselves and them at the Puget Sound Salmon Management Plan. It's been adopted by the federal court. It contains dispute resolution. Why not say, hey, we're going to recognize that? Why not admit that between the sides? We also need to create incentives to encourage compliance with the North of Falcon schedules. Again, simple theory here. If people are late, some of their harvest could be yielded to conservation. You want to encourage us, our side and their side, to comply with the schedule. Third, you've heard a lot of speech today about open meetings. I believe that would materially improve the North of Falcon process. Now, reasonable people can disagree with this, right? They can disagree with these proposals, but the conversation about that is essential to improving North of Falcon. Without advocating for improvements and hearing what the tribes say in response, we are going to continue the spiral that we all are talking about here today. The failure to make proposals, specific proposals, in my view, is a failure of imagination. It is a failure to press ourselves and the tribes to be on our best behavior. You notice the three things we're talking about: transparency, adherence to schedules, and dispute resolution. All of those relate to compelling ourselves and the tribes to have good behavior during these negotiations. And that is how you get to consensus. So all of this can happen. Look, I hear you that it's Commissioner Grable said, hey, the chances of this are dim. Well, they're dark if we don't ask. We have to ask. We have to put a proposal out there and let the tribes respond or ignore it. Even that is a response. The decision not to respond is important as well. It's important that we make these attempts. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank
if there
you,
are
Mr.
any questions,
Fleming.
I'll take them.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Good dialogue.
I just have to say that in my experience, we have made recommendations about how to improve the process, not just the outcome, but the process. And often it's failed to make a difference. So just had to say, we have, and we will always be
working
in that vein, I believe, because it's our responsibility.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think it's important that those things are done, again, just like the meetings, in the sunshine, so that it's interesting, I think, to the public to hear that they've turned them down or why they've turned them down, because it can help inform us about what's possible. Instead of having irrational views of, why don't we do this? Well, maybe there's a reason, and maybe they can convince us that, hey, dispute resolution isn't in our mutual interest. That would be great to understand. But if there's just no public discussion of that, I think it's much tougher for the people like me. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. That leads us into agenda item number 6. Oh, okay.
Anybody else?
Anybody?
I think we're supposed to comment on this.
Yes.
Okay.
Kyle, do you want to come back up? I guess that. I'll be brief. I appreciate all the comments from the public. I think those are out of frustration and concern and desire to make the process better. Believe me, that's what we want to do, too. I just want to comment on the language that you put together, Kyle. I like the language. I think what the changes in there are needed and appropriate, and I think we need to go forward with that. And the last part of my comment is that all the things that were brought up by the public and the commissioners about North of Falcon are important. The one thing that's more important in my mind this year, in 2017, is to come to an agreement with the tribes on a package that is appropriately done and fair for all. We can't, in my mind at least, we cannot come away with no deal. It's devastating to the public. It's devastating to the taxpayers. It's devastating to the department's income for our license sales, et cetera, et cetera. I think the risk is too high. Having said that, it has to be a reasonably fair deal, and I think the staff knows that. We learned a lot last year, and I think we're going to do everything we can to make 2017 a better process.
I think we share that goal, Commissioner Carpenter.
Okay. Any further? Okay. Thank you. Just change the schedule for a little bit and let Ron come up and respond to some of the good conversation that we just had on the public input. So, Ron.
Commissioners, thank you. I really appreciated the public testimony. Everything that was said, the letter that we received from the advocacy group, as Commissioner Wecker says, it makes us all take pause and think about what we do, how we do it, and try to reposition our minds and our actions in how we're moving forward. Relative to some of the things that Mr. Fleming said, I just wanted to come up and others, because they were a pretty consistent group of folks testifying in front of you today. It's almost like they planned it and strategized who was going to say what. I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course, but really good, thoughtful ideas. One of the things that I think over the course of the last couple years that has eroded the co-management process is the lack of opportunity or the forced get-togethers. And I think that as Commissioner Carpenter had pointed out, the desire of the tribes to re-engage and repair what happened this last year is every bit as prominent as ours. And wanted just to take just a moment to say that in the past we'd had what's called the steering committee. The co-managers get together. We've been getting together monthly for the last 3 months. We've also initiated a coordinating committee, which is not only co-managers, but the NOAA, as well as all tribal attorneys, state attorneys, and federal attorneys to participate in the discussion about ESA coverage, how we're going to manage that process so that when we do get to North Falcon, that we can talk about the management and allocation issues that we always struggle over and that takes all of the time. And so I just wanted to take a brief moment to let you know that, let you also know that the two-year project to reestablish a new base period for FRAM that will give us a more contemporary look at fisheries is very, very close to being done. Staff have worked very, very hard on that. Both state, tribal, and federal staff have done yeoman's work. We're really excited about that. What that does is it causes us to look at For instance, a Nooksack spring Chinook stock that had, for a southern U.S. Exploitation rate, was 7%, and now with the new base period implemented, if we hindcast back and look at what it's doing, we've actually been fishing at a much higher rate than we had been thinking. So it's going to cause us to do a couple of things. It'll cause us to look at what our management objectives are, and then also look at what our fishery regimes are. And those conversations, we are currently mapping out how we're going to do that, both just us traveling to meet with the individual tribes, but also to utilize our Pacific Salmon Commission weeks, one in January, one in February, because most of the tribes are there, and utilize that time and try to resolve some of those issues. We have concurrence with the tribes on the entire schedule, and that topic be completed and handed off to NOAA by the end of February, which then gives us that opportunity to talk about management and allocation issues that North Falcon was intended upon for the month of March and the first part of April. So just wanted to come up and talk about the intensity of the schedule, what we're trying to do, the deliberations that we're scheduling. Also, no matter what the tribes have said, so you and our public know, we always talk about our desire to have observers in the room. We believe that it's even if it's only a small group that can go back out and in their own terms tell those that participate in North Falcon what's actually happening, gives some credibility to what we've done behind those closed doors. So we continue to push on that, and have received a stern no for this year, but it's still on the agenda for upcoming meetings. And thank you for the time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks, Ron. Any follow-up questions? Yes.
When Commissioner Menken and I went to observe North of Falcon, of course, we were observing as members of the department. We are part of the department. And I don't think it was controversial at that point that commissioners were present. We were also allowed or free to take part, not take part, to observe the final negotiations in those closed doors that observers from outside the department were not allowed ever to be in. Those final nitty-gritty, yep. This is where the deal is struck meetings. So I wanted that to be understood, that even when there was observers from outside the department, they were only allowed in certain of the meetings, not the ones in which the final deal was struck. So just to make that clear. And then I just also have to say, one thing that's bothered me in the past year, this last year, is that sense that the federal government was ready and willing to serve the interests of the tribes in getting them out fishing, but didn't have any sense of obligation or responsibility to the state's fishers, as if the state of Washington's citizens were somehow second-class citizens. And I think that is not a necessary or inevitable position by the federal government. Sure, they have trust responsibilities. Nobody questions that. But they also have responsibilities. They are our government as well. I'm a citizen of the United States. And as well as being a resident citizen of Washington State. So I just feel like we shouldn't accept that this status quo is inevitable or unchangeable. And in fact, I think that it is worth exploring further if there isn't a way to co-manage with separate permits and put that before our before NOAA, that this is just doesn't seem fair that we have to reach agreement. The tribes are not under that obligation because they can continue to fish. That just makes it unequal, unlevel playing field.
Commissioner Wecker, thank you. If I can, Chair, I couldn't agree more. I know that although we're headed towards a joint ESA coverage, a couple of single years coming up, but then a multi-year by 2019, the way the schedule is playing out and the NEPA process that the permitting has to go through for multi-year, we are still exploring, still having conversations about do we have options to have individualized coverage so that if what happened last year were to ever transpire again, that we would have some confidence in getting our constituents on the water. We have slowed those conversations only because of workload and trying to accomplish the current easiest path, I think the best path, and that is a joint coverage through ESA with or through NOAA with the tribes. But it's still something that's there, and we continue to talk about it and explore it. So thank you for that.
Something you said, Commissioner Wecker, that I guess I have a question first. Is NOAA allowed in as observers to these closed door sessions?
No, they are not.
They're not allowed in?
No, they have to be requested by co-managers to come into the meeting.
And I guess I would think, you know, as we look at the local, you know, wanting to get local observation of what goes on, maybe the tribe needs those who are going to allow them to fish regardless to see the type of behavior that's occurring in these sessions. And to me, I've never been there. I haven't heard the abuse that's been directed at staff, but it seems unprofessional. It seems maybe illegal. And if we were to say, you know, without NOAA there, we're not there, because we want NOAA to understand what's going on. I don't know. It's just another angle on transparency that might help.
I just wanted to support what Commissioner Wecker has said. It puts us in a very difficult position because NOAA has been very blatantly on the side of the tribe. And it is not an equal playing field. Because of their position, we are not in a position to win at all. But it enhances the ability of the tribes to delay because they know, as you said, they're going to fish. And their best estimate was for a separate path could be 18 months for permitting. So the way the current attitude with NOAA, and I agree with you, they do have that trust, and I understand that. But they're using it as a lever against us.
Out of curiosity, do we have the right to exclude NOAA from those kinds of negotiations?
So the way we view the negotiations that I believe all of us are talking about are co-manager discussions, right. And there are times when the tribes have asked us, do you want NOAA in here? And we have said no, and they stay out. Likewise, we have said, hey, we think it would be nice to have NOAA in. Let's ask them a few questions to resolve some issues. And the tribes have said no, maybe later in the discussion. So that's a back and forth it goes. But, yes, we have the ability to not want NOAA there. I think that because of how the process has intertwined itself with the management issues as well as the coverage issues, we've blurred that line. And I'm hoping that if we can get the ESA coverage issues done according to the schedule that we've all adopted, that gives us the time to have the discussions we need to have, and NOAA won't be needed to have those discussions. They'll have written their guidance letter to the council, to the co-managers based on the management objectives that we've developed and given to them, and then we'll move forward in the management discussions and allocation issues. And Commissioner Caney, I can keep you a warm seat at North of Falcon if you'd like to come over. So.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having me come back up.
No, appreciate your time.